welcome to I'm Trying to Think, episode 26. I'm your host, Chuck Werner, and with me, as always, my co-host, Dave Stern.
Yay!
And that is Panama Red by the New Riders of the Purple Sage.
Wait, out of curiosity.
Yes.
Like, when you introduced me, because I feel like my brain and my mouth sort of vaguely disconnected, did I say, hey, or did I say, yay?
I think you said, hey, but I don't...
It felt like...
Can't be bothered to pay attention to you.
I am not sure what came out of my mouth.
All right. Well, I don't want to ruin anybody's enjoyment of the song, but it is about the marijuana.
Huh, that makes sense. It sounded more like a brand name than a guy, anyways.
Yeah, well, they should have really sold out to Panama Jack in the 80s when that was the big
thing.
Yeah. All right, well, anyways, I'm Trying to Think is a podcast sponsored by the Foundation Institute. Check foundation-institute.org. And you can visit I'm Trying to Think on the web at imtryingtothink.com. Then, for the superfans, twitter.com/imtryingtothink. Or search for us on Facebook and become a fan. A little bit later in the show, we will have listener mail, Dave.
Listener mail, listener mail, listener mail.
And to get in on the listener mail, you can email us at contact@imtryingtothink.com. Easy, squeezy, lemon peasy. All right, Dave, let's get episode 26 underway. It's been 2 weeks. Oh, this is our first.
Wait, did you see In the Loop or a commercial for In the Loop?
No.
Oh. Because there's a good joke based on that phrase.
All right, then.
And also, it's hilarious. You would like it a lot.
I should do that at a different time when I'm not podcasting.
No. Let's quit. See it now. I don't know.
We could just watch it while podcasting.
Oh, yeah. That'd be
probably
great.
Lower the quality of the podcast.
Oh, substantially. Substantially.
Right. You know, I'm kind of actually jealous. A lot of TV people, not a lot, maybe. One TV guy I know of, and then these two others. The creator of Battlestar Galactica would watch episodes and podcast while he watched them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could listen to the podcast of him while he
watched
it.
Right, right.
So it's kind of like
commentary. Yeah, yeah.
I really wish we had a live action show so we could do that.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be pretty cool.
I think the problem is we need to make something to comment on, then comment on the thing.
We could comment on a previous episode.
Oh, we could. That would get confusing as friggin' hell.
Not to us.
No, we'd get a lot out of it. Like we'd learn things about what we thought about things we did.
Yeah, other
but I think
listeners.
The problem is, because the secret is with the Battlestar Galactica guy is like, you know, Ronald Moore has one voice, and then everything that's happening on the show is different voices.
We could affect funny voices for it.
Okay, so the commentary. Arr,
I'm going to listen to the podcast. There you go.
See,
very
this
good.
this is a part where really feel like
we're commentary.
We had a lot to say.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, let's not do that.
I think we will, but later.
Let's table that idea.
Till we get better voices, better silly voices, at least.
Yes, yes.
But I am jealous, and the Lost guys, whose names are eluding me because I haven't listened to their podcast in, I don't know, a year.
Yeah.
Since Lost was on last. They don't do a podcast of, you know, that watching and commenting.
No, they just answer questions from people.
And they get piles because everybody watches that show and there are so many people who are crazy about it that they just get piles of imagine having like 100 mails to pick from. For listener mail.
That sounds inconvenient.
Instead of one.
Well, you know, the one is easier to pick from.
Yeah.
Well, we'll give it
two,
that.
But...
Wait, we got two?
Yeah. Kind of.
I thought we had the one.
No, we had a question about whether we had an RSS feed of our podcast. Which totally do. Just go to imtryingtothink.com/feed, is it?
Slash feed is the feed for our entire site. The specific podcast feed is imtryingtothink.com/feed/podcast. So, yeah, if you don't just use iTunes, if you use something else where you need a URL, that's what you should do.
Yeah, or you just visit the website. Come on, people. And we remind you on Twitter and Facebook.
Actually, yeah.
Anyways, this is our first time after a two-week break. Do you feel really excited to podcast?
Yeah.
I do, too.
The last one was a two-week hiatus
thing. I guess, technically,
thing.
But it wasn't on purpose.
No, it was.
Oh, that was a vacation one.
It was both. There were both holidays, but we had planned to do it because of the holidays.
Yeah, no, but something happened and changed the schedule. I don't know. Regardless.
No, I'm pretty sure that thing that happened was us.
I got sick at some point. Wasn't I sick once?
Yes.
All right, good. Glad we cleared that up. All right, Dave, you had something to talk about, so why don't we get right into that?
Yeah, because that last conversation was kind of a zero. So
that
let's
was,
move on.
I could have gone negative one. But anyways.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay.
This could be a 10. Let's get it underway.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so before I came over here, I was, as I do sometimes, at the gym. In which case, you know, I'm, you know, flipping through channels, you know, no good cartoons on, ESPN, uninteresting. So, you know, you kind of go for your, you know, reluctant third choice and wind up on CNN, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you see the little sort of scrawl with the updates with, you know, at the beginning with, like, the really just sort of meaningless one-line sentences that, you know, with no explanation, right?
Right.
And I saw one of those that to me just had sort of mystified me enough that I feel like we have to unpack it here.
All right. Bring it forth.
Okay. The sentence that I saw flashed at the bottom of CNN's little, you know, crawl was, mm-hmm. Pope stuck in Groundhog Day situation with Jews, expert says.
All right. So obviously, the Pope wakes up. Every day it's Rosh Hashanah, and the only way to break the loop is to get the Jews to fall in love with him.
Yeah, it's something like that. And it was like, I mean, Ned Ryerson's a pretty Jewish name. I think that's a fairly Jewish name.
Yeah.
And he's, I don't know, he's kind of a WASPy character, though. I don't know. Is Ned Ryerson Jewy or WASPy?
He's WASPy. He's not Jewy.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he's a plain white guy is really what they were going for there.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So the Pope is...
Pope is Catholic, though.
Yes.
Not a WASP.
Yeah, the Pope is Catholic, bears shit in the woods, we know these things.
Right on.
But I'm just mystified at the whole Groundhog Day situation.
Actually, can I interrupt you for one moment there?
Fine. Fine.
I just wanted to comment on the is the Pope Catholic thing. I mean, you could go with the same thing, same question as to does bear shit in the woods. I don't know. It could shit anywhere it wanted if it were there and had the, you know, motive to. It doesn't need to go in the woods.
No.
You know what I mean?
But it generally does, I think.
The Pope is generally Catholic.
Are there exceptions to this rule?
Well, the Pope, who is the Bishop of Rome in the Roman Catholic Church,
right,
is Catholic. But the word Pope is also used for the Bishop of Alexandria.
Oh, is that the Eastern Orthodox guy?
Yeah, and...
I didn't know they called him a Pope.
Yes, and there's a Coptic Orthodox Pope, too.
Oh.
So is the Pope Catholic?
33, no. Only 33%.
Not necessarily,
33%
yeah.
of popes are Catholic.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's
there might
not
be
even
other popes.
That's not even getting into my favorite historical concept.
The anti-pope?
The anti-pope.
The anti-pope is
You
awesome.
Know I love the anti-pope.
I think the anti-pope only works if you consider him like a Batman villain where he has to do the opposite of what the pope does.
He has a lot of pope-themed crimes.
He's like Bizarro, you know?
He has a lot of pope-themed crimes.
Yeah. Anti-pope is just a great word.
Oh, it's entirely a great word. Yeah. I mean, that's the only reason. Like, the historical thing, you know, whatever, there's a bishop at Avignon, you know. I don't give a shit about, you know, French, you know, church politics in the 1300s. I give a shit about the word anti-pope, because it's great.
I agree. But the Pope Groundhog Day situation. I guess they're saying that. I don't know. I think they're trying to say that he's kind of not making progress with the Jews. Like, it's kind of up and down. But that's not Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day is the repetition of a single event.
Yeah.
Which he's not doing. It's not like he wakes up every day and goes out onto his little papal balcony.
Yeah, poople. It's poople.
Poople.
Yeah.
And is like, I don't know.
And it's the same thing.
And
has the same weather report.
Right. It wakes up every morning to, what was it? It's Sonny and Cher, I Got You, Babe.
Yes.
But I don't even know. He probably doesn't even know that song.
No, probably not. Yeah.
I don't know.
What the Pope knows of American pop culture is a mystery to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely, I don't know what makes it a Groundhog Day situation, or maybe other theory.
Other theory.
Is, because on one hand, they had Groundhog Day in single quotes, so right. They were almost certainly talking about the film.
Yes.
But maybe it's like a Groundhog Day, the holiday situation, where, I don't know, maybe it's, you know, the Pope, basically, I don't know. Because in this case, would the Jews be the groundhog, or are the Jews looking at the Pope and the Pope's a groundhog? How would that metaphor shake out?
So the Pope is a groundhog because he comes out on his little balcony, much like the groundhog comes
out. Right,
the
poopal balcony. He comes on the poopal balcony.
And maybe they aren't referring to the movie because, you know, the groundhog comes out and he makes a decision one way or another, right? But he does come out every year and make that decision, and it's not necessarily the same. So there you do have a back and forth. So the Pope comes out and he says, I saw my own shadow. I'm going to try and raise the Pope Pius XII, who was the Pope during the Holocaust, to sainthood. You know?
Right.
Then he comes out and he's like...
And then
like,
the Jews know that there's going to be, you know, 6 more weeks of wintry interfaith relations.
Yeah. I wanted to use a cool word there, like 6 more weeks of diaspora,
ecumenical
but
chill.
I don't know that...
I know, ecumenical chill.
Okay, there you go. I'll go with that. Sometimes the Pope comes out and he says, I didn't see my own shadow. I'm going to go to the only Jewish temple in Rome, or the biggest Jewish temple in Rome for the first time since 1986.
Right, right. It can definitely go either way.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they could mean the day, like the holiday.
Mm-hmm. Or it could be the other way around, and maybe the Pope is looking at the Jews, and the Jews are the groundhog. I don't know.
What do the Jews do that is anything analogous to the groundhog?
I don't know. Maybe if the Jews come out of, you know, the Jew hole and migrate en masse to Israel and either get converted or destroyed.
Right.
Then it's the apocalypse. And if not, then it's 6 more years of existing.
I think
Is the Catholic Church that... No, the Catholic Church isn't that apocalyptic. That's like the crazy, like, American fundies are the big apocalypse now types.
I think the actual answer is probably that Groundhog Day was released in 1993. And so the guy who's saying this doesn't really remember it that well. Or just like, yeah, this is like Groundhog Day. And he's not really thinking it through.
Yeah, that's probably right.
On the other hand, a news story headline making reference to a not obscure, but fairly obscure.
Well, it's not obscure. I think it's just old.
Why it would be obscure.
Okay.
I mean,
it's not in the front of people's
a lot of
minds.
Things, right?
It's not in the front of people's minds.
Exactly. I think it's a little off anyways. That headline writer, I don't think he has a bright future. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
All right. Well, there you go. So we solved another problem. So why don't we take a short break?
And we will take a short break, but I just want to say that's a really liberal definition of the word solved and the word problem.
Well, Dave, I prefer to think of myself as a problem solver, not a problem maker. But we will be back with more I'm Trying to Think.
Spin that cheek, passenger of the night. Riding like a cowboy through the graveyard of the night. In New York, witch in the dungeon of the day. I'm trying to write my novel, but all I do is play baby boomerang. Baby boomerang. Well, you never slap a person, but you always bang the whole gang.
And welcome back to what I'm Trying to Think, episode 26. Chuck Warner here, Dave Stern there. That song is Baby Boomerang by T-Rex. A lot of T-Rex exposure on I'm Trying to Think. I don't I don't think that's a bad thing.
We're boosters.
Yeah.
We like the boogie. We like the glam.
Yeah. One question I always
we like a good car crash.
That's true. Oh, Dave. Dave.
Yeah. I went there. I went to a rock star dying like 30 years ago. Too soon?
Too soon.
Okay.
But Mark Bolan, who died in that horrible car accident,
it's only funny because he does nothing but talk about cars.
It is, yeah. He talks about how much he loves cars. And, like, there's a song about him. It's basically like a mating song for a car. It's like the equivalent of ODB's Baby, I Got Your Money, but about a car. Okay, maybe not. Anyways, that song Baby Boomerang has the lyric, "You never spite a person, but you always bang the whole gang." I don't know, Mark Bolan. I think you're going to have to explain that one to me.
No, I think that seems pretty cut and dry, really.
All right. Well, that's... Yep.
She never spitefully disincludes any member of the gang from a bang.
From a bang.
That seems pretty simple.
He bangs the whole gang.
Also, from what I understand of T-Rex, also a gong while she's going.
She may bang a gong. She may get it on. I don't know.
Yeah.
Get it on. All right, Dave, what am I holding here in my hands?
All right.
Something you gave me.
Yeah. You are holding a catalog, which I received this week, to my delight.
Home Science Tools.
Yes. Essentially, what this is for is, I believe last May, I helped plan and supply for a party, the theme of which was, you know, haha, science. So, you know, as part of that, you know, I purchased online, you know, many test tubes and beakers and Erlenmeyer flasks and whatnot, which we could drink booze out of.
Yes.
Because, you know, that's what that's for.
Why not?
And doing that, apparently, I am now on the catalog for Home Science Tools. I'm going to guess, because I assume I only shop from the best, so I'll guess the number one supplier of science crap for your homeschooling.
I don't know, you made that up. They don't claim anything like that.
No, I'm pretty sure they're the best. Because I have great taste, is the thing. And I shopped from them.
Okay, all right.
That's why I think they're the best.
Moving on.
So I got this catalog. And there are some things, you know, I've been flipping through it. And there's just some stuff in here that fascinates me. And what I think I want to start with, economically, what I feel like we need to talk about are the economics of buying dead animals.
Oh, okay.
Because that kind of...
Yeah, we've got a dead animal section here. We've got...
One, I just want to say, you know you've got a good catalog when you're kind of flipping through it, and it's like, ah, here's the dead animal section, you know, to peruse.
Yeah, you want a toe? I'll get you a toe.
Okay, yeah, and that toe can be one of any of, like, 12 or 15 animals' toes.
Yeah, the economy of this is very interesting, though. Clam, freshwater, $2.20. Okay, that's reasonable, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That seems kind of boring. You got
your shipping and handling, though.
I don't know. I've dissected a clam at, you know, Legal Seafood. I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you pull it open, there's crap inside, and you eat it.
Dry coral.
Probably not if there's formaldehyde, though. You probably don't eat the preserved one. That shit ain't going to be good for you.
Dry coral. Who cares?
Yeah, dull. And now that's like in the owl pellet level of dissection, you know what I mean? It's just
actually,
dull.
I did save that page. I found the owl pellets.
Yeah, of course you can get some owl pellets. I think it's like $5 a pop.
We'll talk about that in a bit. But
something like $5
a pop. You got to know the economy of this stuff first. Yeah. Then to get to the owl pellets. Earthworm, $1.10. They'll tell you what, you buy 10 or more, 80 cents each.
Yeah, you got to have bulk discounts.
I'm pretty sure you can get earthworms at the bait store cheaper. Assuming you live anywhere near a bait store.
That's true, but remember, these are preserved. Like, it costs extra for the preserving and for injecting the crap in their veins so you can see, oh, that's where red is. Those are veins, or, you know, arteries or whatever, right? I think you're paying extra for that preserving expertise.
All right. Frog, that's the big, I mean,
that's the classic.
That's your bread and butter.
I've taken a frog apart, you know, that's
$3.90, that's 3 to 4 inches. You get in the 4 to 5 inch range.
Yeah, you're kind of upsizing your frog.
You're talking $8.20.
Oh, it's like double the price for that extra inch. Double the price for that extra inch of frog.
Yeah, it's,
you know, no thank you.
It's the same species, the grass frog. But I guess they don't usually get that big. You know what I mean?
Ah, so it's supply and demand kind of thing.
And you're poorly, if you're buying this for school children, let's say.
They need the most leeway they can get.
Your poorly coordinated ones are going to need the bigger
they're
ones.
They're not surgeons. No, they're not surgeons. They're kids.
Grasshopper, $1.10.
That's a decent deal.
It's
decent
like in
deal.
The earthworm area. I don't know. Here we go. This is where we get into the fun stuff. Lamprey.
Ooh.
Who dissects a lamprey? But 18 inches, $11.90.
That's less than a dollar per inch, man.
Gray perch, 9 to 12 inches, $3.60.
Yeah, fish are cheap.
Fish are cheap. Fetal pig, 7 to 10 inches, you're looking at $14.95.
About 15 bucks a pig.
You're going up to the foot-long pig, the 10 to 13 inches, you get $22.95.
Hmm, that's still not bad.
You know.
I know, you're getting up there, though.
Now, here's the one that gets me. Pigeon, $16.80. $16.80 for a pigeon. I don't know if you've ever walked through any city in the United States.
Well, any city in the world.
I get you a pigeon. $5, I get you pigeons. In bulk? Oh, man. I could make a killing.
I don't know, maybe it's preserving the dying... I don't know. Or maybe the pigeon is just a rip. Maybe the pigeon's like a, you know, maybe Dave, the pigeon is like soda at a fast food joint. That's a high margin item.
It gets worse.
That's a high margin item.
Rat, 7 to 9 inches, $11.90.
That's a pretty big rat, though, in fairness.
It's a rat.
It's a big rat, though.
Okay, preserve that in your mind. $11.90, okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, shark, 18 to 22 inches. $12.40. For 50 cents, you get a shark, 50 cents more than the pigeon.
Mm-hmm.
Or rat, 50 cents more than rat. You ask a kid, rat or shark, what are they going to say?
Here's the thing, the kid's going to say rat, or no, wait,
no, the kid's
going to
say
shark. Yeah, but, and here's why I think that's not as clear-cut a deal. From a purpose of, I'm going to take this apart and learn about what's in it, you know, shark is basically like... a shitty prehistoric fish. You know, sharks are awesome, you know, because they come up and they, you know, eat your ass and, you know, they got that going for them. But in terms of, like, what's going on when you, you know, take them apart and see what's in there, not that much, you know.
I don't think you're getting
whereas
the sharks.
Rats have the full mammal thing going on. You know, their rats and mice are, you know, like, human-like enough. I mean, you know, lab rats, lab mice, you know.
All right.
So they got that
rat
going.
Or snake? Because the snake's fairly complex.
Snake's like a tube, whatever. You're taking apart a tube.
You are really down on the non-mammalian specimens.
I like some of them, but I'm jaded on a lot.
Here's where you get to some more fun stuff. Squid, you're talking 8 to 12 inches, $6.90.
Okay, now that's a bargain.
It's a bargain. Squid
that's
there.
That's a bargain.
Starfish. Who cares? All right, turtle.
Now,
It is $9.95 for a 6 to 8 inch turtle, but shell is pre-cut.
Okay, good, because that's going to be hard. You're going to have to crack that.
You're going to need some. You need some tools there.
Yeah.
Now, sheep brain.
Because
I guess they aren't sending you the whole sheep.
No one wants a sheep. It's the bigger animal, little body parts part, right?
Yeah, $10.90 for a sheep brain. I guess they only got one.
Yeah.
Cow eye, because a cow's got two eyes.
Mm-hmm.
$2.40. Sheep heart. $3.90. Brain, worth a lot more than the heart.
Oh, well, it's harder to ship, I think.
Sheep kidney, $3.30. And then you can get, like, the heart, lungs, and the trachea of a sheep, which is really what you want for $12.95.
Ew. Now,
I don't get the... They sell you the brain, sheep brain, and the sheep heart, and the sheep kidney. They only sell you the cow eye. What are they doing with the cow brain and the kidney and the heart? Is that in hot dogs?
I believe they're eating them to gain their courage and wisdom of a cow.
That's pretty smart, then.
Yeah. Also, here's the thing about the pricing that really throws me.
What?
Which I think you're probably in the list. You're getting down to now. Okay, so look. So, fetal pig alone, 7 to 10 inches.
That was $14.95. Yeah.
Now look at the bulk animal pack.
You get the nine medium specimens. You get the fetal pig, the grass frog, the earthworm, the grasshopper, the crayfish, the clam, the perch, the starfish, and Grantia. I don't know what the hell that is, but you get one. and that is $15.95.
So for $15.95, a mere dollar extra from Just a Fetal Pig, you get everything on that list for a buck. I mean, that's that seems like an absurd value point. Like at that point, you know, even if you don't need them, even if you just want to dissect a fetal pig, it almost seems foolish not to get them.
Yeah, I mean, you could leave the perch in your neighbor's, you know, backyard
mailbox
if he's messing with you.
Mailbox,
right? The earthworm fish you could go fishing with.
I don't know. Will fish eat a preserved formaldehyde earthworm?
Yeah, what do fish know?
Fish are pretty dumb.
Yeah,
they'll
dumb.
Do that, yeah.
You get a clam, you can cook that up, have clams.
Oh, that's a bad idea.
Starfish.
A lot of formaldehyde in there.
Starfish, you let it dry out, you put it in your bathroom. It's nice decor. I don't know what you do with a grasshopper. All right, well.
And you don't know what a grantia is. We've established that.
Don't know what the grantia is. It doesn't matter.
So the one thing I'm kind of curious about, though, the one thing that makes me a little nervous, just because that seems way too good to be true, it's either like, you know, buying soda at the movies, where clearly there's something in there that's just a profit center that lets them do that, so you're still kind of, it's not as good a deal as you think it is.
Yeah.
It might be like that.
Uh-huh.
Or it might be like supersizing at the fast food restaurant where just like it psychologically seems like, oh, yeah, that's a great deal. Why shouldn't I do that? And you just do it.
Yeah.
But it's really just bad for you somehow. You know, it just maybe that much formaldehyde in your house or like in a package, like you open the package and you get a little dizzy. I don't know, maybe.
I think there are links between formaldehyde and some terminal diseases.
And maybe because we don't even know and they don't tell us what a grantia is. So maybe grantias just really suck and they're trying to get rid of them by having this really good deal. But then they don't explain what a grantia is. You're just like, oh, here's all these great preserved animals for me to dissect. Oh, and this horrible, this grantia.
All right.
This horrific thing.
So before you go too far into how horrific the grantia is, I've Googled it. Grantia is a genus of calcareous sponges belonging to the family Grantidae. So probably not that bad.
I've seen some pretty nasty sponges.
All right.
Like,
if you say so. But I want to examine more the price point of the owl pellet.
Uh-huh.
The owl pellet is... Wait, is that poop or is it barf?
Pretty sure it's an owl barf.
You're right. It's owl barf. It's
owl
barf.
Couldn't. I mean, really, you wouldn't think that that something of that width could come out of anywhere of an owl.
It's an inch and a half. An inch and a half of owl barf or larger. Or larger, Dave. Two-inch owl barf.
Owls are barfing machines,
maybe
man.
A three-inch owl barf.
If there's two things, if there's four things owls are good at, it's turning their head around crazy, like 180 degrees, going hoo, eating
Who
Tootsie Pops.
Good. Eating Tootsie Pops.
And horking up things full of bones.
Yeah, it's you get mice and vole bones. Isn't that great?
Oh, man. Do you think you can find a Tootsie Pop stick in there?
That would be entertaining, to say the least. Here's what one customer said about our owl pellets. We did the project with another family, and so we had a total of 6 kids ranging in age from 6 to 15. And they all had something different in their pellet. Plus, they had a super time.
I feel like the 15-year-old must have been, at that point, just been, like, real... Is that old enough to be ironic about it, or would they just be sullen?
Almost. I almost guarantee that was a homeschooled 15-year-old. So they really don't understand irony. Yeah.
So, like, at that age, like, if you're 15 and you've gone to, public or private, you know, basically any school with people, really.
Yeah.
You'd just be like, owl pellets, man.
Man.
You know, you'd be jaded. You would affect that.
But here's the thing. An owl pellet, owl barf, $340. And that includes the guide.
Oh, man. Which is good, because otherwise you're going to get lost in the owl barf.
Yeah, $320 without the guide. So that guide must be, I don't know, pretty cheap.
Yeah, it's probably just like a little pamphlet, like, hey, this is owl barf. Here's a bone. Here's what bones look like.
Now,
enjoy.
Now, here's the crazy thing. You can get synthetic owl pellets. Fake owl barf, okay? They're supposed to be less messy. They still have skeletons in them. I don't know if... I guess they just put them in themselves.
Are they fake skeletons, or is it real skeletons in fake owl barf?
It does not say, but I'm going to guess real. They're $330 for an owl pellet.
Huh.
Yeah. You don't save that much going with a synthetic. Heck, actually, it's 10 cents more if you're getting owl pellets without the guide.
Well, yeah, because you're saving yourself some mess.
This is my theory on the synthetic owl pellet. You give kids owl pellets. They pick apart all the bones and have a good time, as stated above.
A super time.
And then you take the bones, because they don't care about the bones, and you rewrap them, and maybe you barf them up. I don't know how you do it. And then, sell them again.
You put them in a barfing machine.
Yeah, and you sell them again. Bam. It's just smart.
That's good business, and that's good for the environment.
Now, we were talking earlier, too, about, I was remarking about how much the pigeons cost. $16.80, right?
Yeah.
For a pigeon. Here you can get an incubator with four quail eggs. $31.95. You got to figure, even if you get two quail, that's worth it. Because then you dissect them. I mean, they're not bad to eat. They are not bad to eat. So you can get eight fertilized quail eggs for $23.95. That's not bad. Dave, you go to the store and you pick up quail, it's going to cost you more. Eight of them, at least, are going to cost you more. And, I mean, you got to figure, even if you get six out of that eight pack, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
And you can get an automatic egg turner. You can have a whole quail farm in your own house if you wanted one.
And I don't.
All right. Well, there's one other section here that we would like to address before we get off the topic of the science catalog. Oh, there's a slinky. I didn't know that. You could totally get a slinky. I don't know what science. Hey, look, it slinks. All right, we're done.
That's mechanics.
Of course, that's actually pretty much how a slinky works when you get one anyways. You're like all excited, and then you make it go down some stairs, and you're like, all right, done.
Yeah, that's what that can do.
Or you find out it doesn't work really well, and you're like, oh, never mind. Now
I'm more disappointed.
Yeah.
It's either disappointment or immediate disappointment are the two things a slinky can get you.
The Apologia Curriculum and Kits, which is Christian apologetics, creationism, science, if you will, quote-unquote, intelligent design, if you want to use that word. However you want to make it, you can... The elementary kits were written by a homeschool mom, which is just screams quality to me for a science kit.
I mean, that's certainly a qualification of some sort.
You can get Exploring Creation with Astronomy, Exploring Creation with Botany, Exploring Creation with Zoology. Those are for the second to sixth graders.
Mm-hmm.
You get up in the 6 to 10, you get Exploring Creation with physical science. That's grade 6 to 10, so that's 11 to 15
years. Right.
Grades 9 to 12, you get a bunch of kits. You can get Exploring Creation with Chemistry. Ah, you make a volcano and...
And God.
I don't know, God did that.
I don't understand some of these. Like, I get, you know, okay, you do the Exploring Creation with Biology and you shit on Darwin. Fine.
Yeah.
You get, like, Exploring Creation with, I don't know, Astrophysics and you shit on the Big Bang. Fine. Right. But, like... I feel like chemistry, you could probably just teach chemistry. Like, I feel like, is there a conflict there I'm not aware of? Or is it just the idea of, like, hey, a normal chemistry textbook has missed opportunities to talk about God? Is that the idea there?
I would have to imagine. To read you the description of Exploring Creation with Chemistry, it does not sound interesting to me in the least, which means it sounds exactly like chemistry. Stoichiometry, atomic and molecular structure, thermodynamics.
Yeah, so I feel like
I also don't understand how. Could,
I don't know which of those conflict God, with the Bible.
How could God enjoy thermodynamics? God surely violates all of thermodynamics. How do you teach a kid thermodynamics when you believe in God? Like, oh well, this is all contributing to the heat death of the universe, except God won't let that happen.
I think at that point you just do the Stephen Jay Gould dodge, you know, the classic escape, which was, am I correct in saying he was the one who was just like, science keeps on finding all this stuff out, and then God is the other stuff. Was that his dodge? Was that his thing?
I don't know. That's what people call the God of the Gaps, which is just the more that we explain with science and everything else, God just kind of is like, well, God does all the other stuff. Well, God used all that stuff. That's how he made it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the answer that I think, you know, sort of materialist, you know, scientist, atheist, whatever, egghead types like us, and religious people can come together in harmony and say that God of the Gaps is lame. I don't think either group likes the God of the Gaps, you know?
Yeah, he's non-overlapping magisteria. That's his deal, which is, yeah, God's over here, science is over here.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, which Dawkins actually addressed in The God Delusion. I don't remember exactly how, but...
I feel like, you know, Gould has kind of a noble sort of goal there. Where he's just like, stop all the fighting, everybody.
Yeah.
But that's not how that's going to work.
No.
No.
No. What's his name? The guy who was headed up the Human Genome Project.
Dr. Genome, I think, right?
No.
That's why it's called that.
No.
Pretty sure it's Bob Genome.
No.
Pretty sure it's Bob Genome.
No, I'm forgetting his name right now.
Man.
But he is a Catholic, and he says that DNA evidence alone shows that evolution is true, right?
Right. Yeah, the Catholics are, you know.
And then he's not like, and also God exists. And he did it. And, it's okay. Well, like, I guess that's fine. He's a science advisor, to the president, I think now.
Right.
That guy whose name I still don't remember.
Bob Genome. How many fucking times do I have to tell you?
Bob Genome. That's not what genome comes from. Whatever.
If he's a Catholic, he might be... Is he like a kind of Italian-American Catholic? His name might be Gino Genome.
His name is also not Gino Genome. You're terrible at this. Terrible. But regardless, moving on. More catalog fun. We also have my favorite thing that you can get from this catalog.
Uh-huh.
The Human Body Dissection Science Kit.
Is this another Apologia project?
Yep, it's under the Apologia. So apparently, I don't know. Human dissection, that's all I know.
Human dissection, that raises to me a couple questions.
All right.
Because that's not legal, right? You can't dissect a person, right?
I'm sure you can dissect them, but they are... you can't just, you know, take a body and...
Yeah, that doesn't sound right. I mean, what comes in the kit?
This is where it gets a little confusing.
Mm-hmm.
The kit includes a fetal pig, sheep heart, and cow eye.
Okay.
And it is it contains the specimens for the dissection labs in the human body, fearfully and wonderfully made.
Okay, before we jump on the train, that is by far the best part about that.
Yeah.
I just want to clarify. I think the way they're going is they're taking, okay... Here's all the stuff that's legal to sell. We'll take the stuff that's most human-y and give that to you to dissect. So you got, you know, the cow eye, it's a lot like human eye, the sheep art, you know, and so on and so forth. But
the fetal pig is a lot like a fetal person?
No, pigs are, like, surprisingly human-y. Remember, like, they synthesize insulin from pigs, you know, like... Pigs are more human than...
That's not dissecting a human.
Pigs are more human
Let
than
me
human.
Get to my favorite
yeah,
part
get
here.
To the, yeah, I think my there's favorite a clear part thing we need to talk
is
about.
This book, which is a textbook, The Human Body Fearfully and Wonderfully Made. I don't know that they understood how grammar works when they titled this book. Not wonderfully made, okay. It was made with care and, you know, it's...
Yeah, and a sense of wonder.
Well made, that's fine. Fearfully made. Now, fearfully would be an adverb modifying made to describe how it was made. Now, assuming God made the human body, that means God made...
Was fearful.
God fearfully made the human body.
Right.
He was fearful. He was feeling or inclined to feel fear or apprehension or anxiety. He was afraid. Why was he afraid?
Probably because he hadn't made clothes yet, so he had to look at dirty parts.
Oh, yeah, dirty parts. Now,
that's
I
not
mean,
good.
Think about how would you use fearfully in a sentence? I fearfully put my keys in the door because there were murderers after me. Now, God fearfully made the human body.
Why?
Because there were murderers after him?
No.
Well, is he afraid of...
Well, what would have been there to be murderers?
All right, exactly. Like, it's the seventh day, or sixth day, because he rests the seventh day,
yeah.
Right? I don't know. Sixth day,
you know.
There's a day.
He's made the sun. He's made the moon.
Sun, stars, sky, lions, apples, voles, owl pellets.
Yes. The owls who barfeth.
The creepy things that creepeth. The crawly things that crawleth. The owly things that barfeth. And the... fearfully things that fearfuleth.
Yes.
I mean, what is he afraid of? He made all the stuff. He could just not make it or unmake it. This is my only theory on it, okay? He's fearfully making the human body because it's like renting Saw 4. Like, he just likes it even though it scares him, you know? Like, he's a horror nerd.
Yeah, he's kind of giving himself the willies.
Right, he's a horror nerd, right. He's just trying to, like, freak himself out with a human body. Which explains the penis, honestly.
Yeah.
That's a goofy-looking thing.
I don't know, is that... That seems like more of a less Dario Argenti and more, like, you know, slapstick comedy.
No, that looks Geiger-ish, man. Or Geiger-ish, depending on your pronunciation.
Depending on whether it's right or not.
Well, that begs the question, does the H.R. Giger alien look like a penis because the penis is scary, or is it just scary?
I don't know. I think it's scary because it looks like it simultaneously is supposed to look like both human genitals.
Yeah, it kind of does look both like both human genitals. They're very genitalian influenced.
It's very Georgia O'Keeffe. It's distressing in all kinds of ways. Yeah. It's
very Georgia O'Keeffe. Well,
I mean, basically, it's a penis vagina with teeth is why the monster and alien is, you know, as sort of as psychologically distressing as it is.
It's really a shame that Freud died before the Alien series started. However, it is a bigger shame that the human body fearfully and wonderfully made is $52.
That is disappointing.
Because otherwise,
I'm not willing to pay that much to find out what's inside it.
We could get a new mic for that, and we could use that. I mean, these mics suck.
They do.
Do they? But it's good to know that creationists can get all their jazzy jazz from this wonderful catalog, HomeScienceTools.com. Thank you very much for your entertaining catalog. And now I'm going to fearfully.
And wonderfully.
Move us on to a break here. And then we will be back with more of I'm Trying to Think. Is The Court of the Crimson King by King Crimson. It's a little weird. I mean, the Rolling Stones don't have a song called Stones Rolling. Dave, what do you think?
No, T-Rex did have that song called Rex T.
No, they didn't. Anyways.
And you're just shooting down everything I say. You're just shooting me down.
Third segment, Listener Mail.
Listener mail.
And as a reminder, you can participate in the listener mail section by being a listener and mailing us at contact@imtryingtothink.com. All right, we got another wonderful email from superfan Hillock Joe. You remember Hillock Joe?
Indeed.
Hillock Joe.
And his many delights.
He is a delightful superfan. All right. Hillock Joe writes, in the middle of February, I'll be running a game of Action Philosophers at a role-playing gaming convention. However, I'm having a hard time deciding what philosophers to use for the characters. In your professional opinions. And right. I like Joe. I like Joe every time he writes more and more. Anyways, in your professional opinions, what philosophers would make good superheroes and what powers should they have? Sincerely, Hillock Joe.
All right. Well, if he hasn't already, I'll assume he has because he's using the name. So I would recommend he check out the series of comic books, Action Philosophers, yeah. which engage this and fairly, you know, engage that idea.
Yeah. But who would you be your first action philosopher in a gaming situation? Now, we're both very familiar with the role-playing, yeah. the world of the role-playing games.
We're both that nerd.
We're both that kind of nerd, right?
Very much so.
Yeah.
So, let's see. I'm going to have to go with... good. I mean, in terms of jokes that anyone coming at this is going to make, you know... Yeah. There's the Nietzschean Ubermensch is almost kind of a gimme. I almost didn't want to go to that first because it's a gimme.
Yeah, but what would he do? What would Nietzsche do? Because, I mean, that's... I mean, you can just say Ubermensch, ha ha ha, well, it's because mm-hmm. Superman is a literal translation.
Yeah,
but
yeah, but...
What would Nietzsche do? Like, a combat... What would his combat powers be like?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think some of it is... I see it kind of like Rorschach for the Watchmen. Because if you want to talk about, you know, literal, you know, the actual philosophical Ubermensch... Kind of the real key for him is, you know, that sort of anti-heroic, you know, just transcending of, you know, the morality of the herd.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, but
so
that doesn't
work
too well.
He's willing to do what he needs to do to get
the
job
Punisher,
done, you know?
Then maybe.
Kind of. He'll fight you dirty. You know, he'll fight you real dirty and mean.
Right. He does not have the strictures of, like, a superhero code. That's fine. But what kind of, I mean, what are his powers?
And syphilis ray?
Syphilis ray is, yeah, okay. He's, I mean, I don't know, ray, syphilis touch, syphilitic touch, maybe.
Right.
He could have a syphilitic touch, right? I was thinking,
maybe just
I mean,
a syphilis punch.
He's
it's
got
a syphilis sock.
He's got like some sort of maybe god killing power, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But only, it's going to be limited, because he can't, while he could kill God, he can't just kill a dude by saying, you're dead.
No.
He has to have, you know, some concept.
He has to have philosophical justification
right,
for why that guy is
right.
dead.
If there's something conceptually that isn't justified, he can mm-hmm. make it dead.
Let's see, what else can he do? He can...
Fly, I don't know.
Yeah, why sure, not? He can totally fly, that's
fun. He has a super punch,
also, Hegel bashing.
Hegel bashing.
Maybe that's a super
but what
punch.
What if
Hegel
is his teammate? You know what I mean?
Then there's friction, quite
yeah,
frankly.
There's going to be friction. I mean, there's going to be friction no matter who you put on that team. You put two
you know,
people on the team.
I don't know. What I feel like you could do, honestly, in terms of uniting against a common enemy, you could have any philosopher from the 19th century
uh-huh.
who isn't Hegel. And they could all fight Hegel. Because, man, you want to talk, you know, something that unites, you know, Nietzsche, Kierkegaard... Schopenhauer, like just,
right.
man, any philosopher from the 19th century who isn't Hegel, man, that guy fucking hates Hegel.
Let me, let's move on. We're going to skip Kant because there are a lot of jokes there that, let's just not make them.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I know he could give you imperatives.
Categorical imperatives.
Yeah.
And you would have to.
You'd have to do them.
You'd have to do them.
You know?
He's categorically imperative you.
Yeah. So that's something. You can have Kant just laying down those commands.
How about, let's go with, I mean, Socrates. You got a lot of stuff going on there. He's got, I mean, he could basically, he has like sort of confusion powers, right?
Right.
He just throws something at you.
You know, I feel like.
And you're kind of
given,
dizzied
you know,
or dazed, maybe.
Given kind of the Socratic method, you know, Socratic dialogue, I feel like, let's just say he knows jujitsu.
Yeah.
That seems appropriate.
Yeah, it's definitely.
You know, because I feel like he doesn't have superpowers. I feel like Socrates is kind of the Batman of the team, you know?
Yeah, possibly, right.
He's the mind.
Like, he's like
know?
A good guy Riddler.
Yeah.
Like, he can sphinx you, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
He throws something at you, and you're like, oh, and it's like mind blast.
Yeah.
He's a mind blast, but it's... purely just him saying something.
Yeah, based on logic. Yeah.
Right.
And then, you know, is Plato kind of like his Robin?
Is it like a Batman Robin? And then Aristotle is Plato's Robin. So you have like a two-level Robin thing going on.
Uh-huh.
So Socrates is like 9 feet tall. And Plato's like 7 feet
tall.
And then Aristotle's like 4. Like, he's the boy wonder.
I feel like that's giving Aristotle the short shrift, though.
I mean,
Aristotle's got powers. You
have, yeah, what's he going to do? This is how this works and this is how that works. Nobody cares.
I don't know, because here's the thing. Aristotle, he's versatile. You know, it's like, you know, how Batman's got something in every situation for the belt. You know, Aristotle, you know, if suddenly it's like, you need to explain poetry, bam, Aristotle's got that. You know, you need to explain the structure of biology. Okay. Aristotle's got
this.
You know?
I'm going to throw it out there for you. This is how it works. Uh-huh. You got Plato is like Batman, but better. Okay.
Really? Plato? Socrates.
Socrates is Batman better. Plato is like between Robin and what was Robin when he grew up and became his own?
Nightwing,
right. I'm not a DC Comics
guy. I'm not either, but I'm just enough of a nerd to know things that I don't care about. Like, I could care less about most comic books, but goddamn do I know a lot about them.
Yeah. But moving on. It's
my brain.
I don't want to hold up. Yeah. You know don't how like Joe it. Gets about sidetracking.
Yeah. Focus. Eyes on the prize.
So, okay. So you got, Plato's between Robin and Nightwing, right?
Yeah.
And then Aristotle, I think, is more like Alfred. He's like Alfred Robin.
Like a little bit between both, yeah.
Yeah. He's like a sidekick, but he's more of like...
He's also just keeping shit organized, keeping everything shit going, together.
Right. He cleans up the Greek cave.
Uh-huh.
I guess is what we would call that. Or Socratic Cave or something.
Oh.
I get Socratic Cave. He cleans up the Socratic. He knows where all the stuff is in the Socratic Cave, you know?
Right, he's categorized it.
He
knows what properties it has.
Right, like he's fixed the Socratic mobile enough that he can tell you inside and out how it works. But on his own, he's not getting very far. He's like, maybe like an Iron Man even, where he's got... some sort of, you know, powers based on, I don't know, science, academics. And Plato's got forms power. He's got forms, so he's like...
He can generate shape-shifting. And he can generate stuff with his mind, because he envisions it and he brings it from the world of forms.
Right. And forms...
And it's perfect.
He's shape-shifting. He can turn into, like, a cat or, like Incredible Hulk kind of guy, maybe. Uh-huh.
And I feel like, because he could shapeshift, but I also feel like he can just, like, reach into the world of forms like, and pluck stuff out.
Doesn't the Green Lantern do that or something?
I feel like he makes stuff from the world of forms. Yeah, he makes form stuff.
All right, so that's good. He's like, object creation.
Okay, yeah, so that's what we got if we're kind of in the Greek mode.
Right. I was going to go, like, jump all the way forward to somebody modern, like Noam Chomsky.
Mm-hmm.
He's got, He can manufacture things, I guess.
Yeah, he's a little technical for me.
He can manufacture consent. I don't know.
There's nothing I like about that.
He's got like mind control, but he's hesitant to use them. That's like a Marvel character, you know?
Yeah.
It's like he's been given a power, but... Or maybe like Preacher, but I couldn't get past the first like 5 pages of that book.
Because it's...
Like horribly like bigoted. Yeah.
It's Garth Ennis-y. It's like a... written to make 13-year-old guys think it's awesome.
It's like a concept of darkness where darkness is, like, just making fun of everybody and misanthropy, which is not really dark.
Yeah, but okay, sidetracked.
Anyway, sidetracked a little.
Okay, I'm trying to think.
Noam Chomsky, I think, yeah, like a mind control power that he's hesitant to use.
Uh-huh. Okay, there's always...
He can manufacture consent. Also, physically, I mean, anybody can kick his ass. Have you seen that guy? He's like a skinny little Jew man.
He's very sort of delicate. So it's kind of like a Professor X situation.
Yeah, there you go. Professor X, yeah. Noam Chomsky kind of Professor X, I think.
I'm trying to think. What else can we have?
See, now me, just...
You got Thomas Aquinas.
Oh.
I feel like, one, he could have kind of a blob situation because he was, you know, that's one of the things he's known for almost as much as you know, his apologetics work. Is for being a big fat guy.
Yeah.
So he can be hard to move, you know?
Yeah.
No, he's also just, he's a rock. His faith, as well as his bulk, makes him a rock.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of any powers for him, though.
Well, I think there's that, you know, there's that immobility is something. You know, his faith gives him strength and makes him a rock.
Mm-hmm.
His,
I just thought of something. You could put, you got Noam Chomsky, right?
I thought of another good one while we're in that sort of medieval, early medieval range.
Okay, go ahead.
Simple. Occam's Razor. There you go. William of Occam.
Oh, man.
Cutting shit
William of Occam, just with a big sword, cutting shit
I know,
up.
It's a big sword, or it's just like a Wolverine kind of thing.
Give him a big sword, but make him like Wolverine-y. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or he has like a chainsword arm.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I'm the best at what I do, bub. And what I do is making sure that entities do not multiply beyond necessity.
That's right. That's not as smooth of a catchphrase.
Yeah, but I'm an idea man. I'm not a writer, okay? Right. You know, it's something we can work
on. If we were going to cast them, we're kind of thinking in a superheroes mode here, which action philosophers kind of maybe a superhero mode. But if you're going to cast them as, like, the D&D classes, you know, Thomas Aquinas, cleric, okay, you know.
Yeah,
big,
that's kind of a gimme.
He's got his religious. Socrates, rogue, because he's got sneak attack. You know, you're, like, talking at him, and you think you're,
and
you know what you're talking
you
about. And he comes at you and hits you in the gut, right?
Yeah.
It's like a brute, what do you call them, brute rogues in the new one, where brutal rogues, where they hit you with harder weapons. I don't know,
they hit you in the front.
Like I'm a goofball.
I don't know.
Who would be the wizard? I mean, that's an Aristotle kind of thing.
Yeah, Aristotle is wizardy.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Yeah, I could do that. Kant would be a paladin.
Also,
do you think so? Kant, paladin,
yeah,
Manuel
Kant?
Yeah,
right. Also,
just like, because categorical imperative. Wham! Hit you with a sword. Bam.
Yeah. Also, just going back from the D&D thing, the superhero thing.
Yeah.
While we're thinking about kind of church philosophers, I like the idea of Boethius. I'm maybe pronouncing it wrong. I'm not good at that. But I like him just throwing wheels at people. Just hurling wheels of fate.
I was thinking we could go pre-Socratic. What was the gentleman's name?
You can go with all
Heraclitus.
Of the...
Heraclitus.
No, you can go with... The pre-Socratics could be... That's actually a great team right there, because it's practically the Fantastic Four. You have, Thales, who thinks everything is air. You know?
Yeah.
Anaximander, who thought it was, like, Earth. Or, you know, I don't remember which one was which. I may be getting that all wrong. But
like
basically...
Captain Planet.
You have most of the elements covered. Yeah, it's like, you know, Earth, you know, fire, wind, water, and Apeirion.
I think...
Apeirion, you know, is kind of like heart. Yeah, I think that's actually... I would pick just sort of an elemental powers-based pre-Socratics thing.
Yeah, Heraclitus, you'd throw in the fire category,
yeah,
I think.
He's the fire guy.
And then,
no, he's the fire guy. Yeah. One of them was earth, one of them was air. I believe one of them was... Yeah, Thales, I think, was the first one, and he was water. Then I think Anaximander was air, and Anaximenes was earth. But it may be vice versa, because who the fuck cares?
Yeah.
But
nobody
seriously,
cares about those guys.
Like, look those guys up, have it be an element-based team, and they fight Parmenides, because he thinks they're all bullshit.
Pythagoras, I know, doesn't always come up as a philosopher, but...
No, just as a sinister math cult leader.
Yeah.
He's a great guy to put in
there. Great supervillain.
He has cultists. He has cultists to fight. He has... Crazy math. Harmony powers.
Right. And actually, you know, one great theme to do with action philosophers would be action philosophers with mathematician villains. Descartes, come on. I mean, Descartes is a supervillain, you know? I think, therefore you ain't.
Ooh.
You know, that's a catchphrase.
And he traps
right
you in the Cartesian grid.
Right? Yeah. And, you know, he's the demon, man. He's the demon controlling, he's the demon deluding you into thinking this world is real.
You could also fight Laplace's demon.
Laplace's demon, there you go. He knows where everything is, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's got it all set out there. I don't know exactly how that helps him, but I guess he knows where things are going to be because he knows where things are.
He predicts. He's a step ahead of you.
He knows where everything is, right? he'd be hard to beat.
Yeah.
Yeah, but mathematicians are great for crazy stuff. And just, you know, they tie in with philosophers a lot, but they're in many ways... You could consider them the enemy of a philosopher. You got Fibonacci. He could, like, transform.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And he just fires infinite strings of numbers at you.
Right. That'd be pretty cool. Laplace could also transform, because he actually has a transformation.
Okay, so I think, Laplace. Yeah, we've got a couple ideas that we've thrown out. I think just in terms of...
Now,
I mean, do you have any more, or do you just want to bring it around? I think we're...
No, I was just thinking Fibonacci actually should be the multiple man.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Right, he splits, because he's got the pyramid.
Splits into one, one, two...
Right, one, two, three, five.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think we've got a couple good ideas. So, you know, I think we've helped, you know, have some potential power sets and stuff. So,
yeah.
Like I say, I like the idea of all the elemental
pre-Socratics that's
fighting.
Fine.
No, that's a good one. I like the idea of everyone in the 19th century except Hegel fighting Hegel, because that's basically what happened.
Poor Hegel. I like Hegel.
Well, you know, Hegel was doing okay, remember? Because he was teaching, you know, the Prussian nobility, and because his philosophy said, you know, and it turns out that here in Prussia now is the best thing in the world, and you guys should own all the land you own, they liked him a lot.
They did.
So he was doing okay.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Schopenhauer, like, two rooms over, talking about, like, sort of Buddhistic self-negation.
Nobody liked him.
No, no, he was unlikable. He got his revenge in the end when he was very scared of disease, so he fled the city in like 1830, and then Hegel died.
Oh, I got a good one.
So,
Heidegger, time traveler.
Time traveler and a being traveler.
Yeah.
Time and space.
He can transcend both time and being, or being in time and space.
Also Nazi.
Also, yeah. I mean, technically. He's a technical Nazi. He's not like a fascist Nazi. He's a technical Nazi.
I'm not. I'd have to look it up, but he was a.
He's a member of the Nazi Party.
Yeah, he was a member of the Nazi Party to.
Hey, so get was ahead Oscar Schindler, buddy.
Yeah, but Heidegger didn't fucking save crap.
I think he just left, actually.
No, basically, Heidegger was a Nazi, so he could retain and get his professorship.
Yeah,
and then after the war, he's just like, meh. He felt kind of, I think he was mostly just sort of embarrassed and sort of retreated into the Black Forest.
Which, I love
that
the
sounds
Germans.
Like a great role-playing
it's great
game.
Great that the Germans
do.
Had a Black Forest, though. It is
do they
good.
Still have the Black Forest? I hope they do.
I think they do. I don't see why they got rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they might have chopped some of it down. But all right. Well, that was a great answer. I think we helped out quite a bit.
Also,
we're very helpful.
Got to say, you know, Derrida just tearing shit apart. Just tearing shit apart. The deconstructionator.
I spent a long time thinking about how I could wheedle in Michel Foucault, but it was like, oh, he's bald, so he looks like Professor X, but we already had the Professor X thing, so
mm-hmm.
I didn't really know where to go with him. Yeah.
I don't know. I think if you're going French post-existentialism, I really think the best thing is just Derrida, the deconstructionator.
Yeah, I mean, the deconstructionator. He's like... It's like Devastator of the Constructicons.
Mm-hmm.
Form Derrida.
The Deconstructicons?
Yeah, he's a Deconstructicon. That would be his nickname. He would be Derrida the Deconstructicon.
Ooh, that's good. That's good.
All right, couple things I wanted to clarify before we cut out this episode.
Okay, because it's about that time.
It is that time. First of all, Francis S. Collins. Francis Collins, the head of the Human Genome Project for at least a time. And is now a director of the National Institutes of Health.
All right.
By appointment of President Obama. And on October 14th, 2009, to bring this episode all the way around, Pope Benedict appointed Francis Collins to the Pontifical Academy of Sciences. Because, as I said, he is Catholic. What are you going to do? And... The Fearfully and Wonderfully Made, actually from Psalm 139:14, in your Bible, if you look it up in the Bible, I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well.
That is still doesn't Psalm. Make all that much sense.
Still doesn't make any
maybe
sense.
Maybe it's supposed to be, you made me fearful? You made me to be fearful?
I'm made in a way that makes me afraid. I don't really get that either. I don't know how those two, like, I just think they like to throw fear in a lot in the Bible. Like, oh my God, you big, like, which is unnecessary because if a guy like, and so is wonderful, really, if you're omnipotent, omniscient.
Yeah. Fearful and wonderful. We
fearful.
Know.
Yeah.
We know
all those, anything else you want, cute, ugly, whatever you want to do. It's you. You got all the adjectives, buddy. You got them all. Except, like, impotent. But really, you should have that, too. Because omnipotent should include impotent. Doesn't make any sense, but that's how it works.
All right.
Should include the ability to completely remove all your powers.
Oh.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hope that you've enjoyed this episode 26 of I'm Trying to Think. I was addressing that to you, Dave, not to the audience.
Yeah. Well, we don't care. We haven't started caring about them. I don't see why we would start now.
No, now's not the time. But did you enjoy episode 26?
Yeah, I had a good time. It was fun.
Well, then we will reconvene in 2 weeks' time for episode 27 of I'm Trying to Think. And you should tune in. That's you, the listener, not you, the Dave. You can't see who I'm looking at, which is one of the limitations of the podcast.
Yeah, but he's looking at.
Medium.
But I'll tell you, he's looking at you, the listener.
I'm looking at the microphone, which is my symbol for you, the listener. That's all I have. I relate to you entirely through this piece of silver in front of me, which should be replaced with a much better microphone.
Hey, your microphone's made out of silver?
I mean, it's silver in color. Hello. Hello, audience. Are you in there? Hello. You should write us at contact@imtryingtothink.com. Hello. All right, that concludes episode 26. Thank you very much for tuning in to I'm Trying to Think. We'll be back with you in 2 weeks' time. Oh, you know what?
What?
Say goodbye, Dave.
Goodbye, folks.
See you in 2 weeks. If you want to sing along, you can. I mean, this is the finishing part. We can do whatever we want.
Yeah, we got nothing. Yeah. This ain't staying in. I can tell you that right now.
Oh, come on. You gotta leave this in. Here you go.
Mommy's all right. Daddy's all right. They just seem a little weird. Surrender. Surrender.